Hello and welcome to The Change Troubleshooter. This is Nina Dar's podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Changing Mindsets season of The Change Troubleshooter. This episode is called Changing Mindsets on Sustainable Leadership. Today, Nina talks to Brad Pierce, Chief Transformation Officer at Sustainability Mindshift and Principal and Founder of Seed Strategies. Brad has over 25 years' experience in helping organisations create more sustainable and regenerative futures.
Welcome to the Change Troubleshooter podcast, and I am delighted to have Brad Pierce with me today. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Nina, it's great to be here. Thanks.
And we are going to talk to you about changing mindsets on sustainability leadership, which is a conversation that we both love, and Brad knows much more than me and can go much further than me in this topic. And that's what I know you love as the guest that we have on this podcast. So Brad and I met because I don't even know how I found you, Brad. I think you must have put something on LinkedIn and it was advertising a little set of interactive discussions. They weren't like presentations. It was more like a group, wasn't it?
The Changemaker series, probably, yeah.
Yeah, the Changemaker series, that's it. Right. And you could just sign up, and was it one a week where you had some absolutely fantastic guests?
Yeah, thank you. And then, yeah, it was one a week for five. We did five of them, and then we had a capstone at the end where we invited the speakers back, and a few of them were able to make it back, and so we had sort of a panel approach at that point. Yeah,
it was really great, and I'm still in touch with some of the people that I also met through that group. So really great. And so I was really pleased that you were willing to do this, because when I looked back at your background even then, and again for this podcast, you have had such an amazing background that I can see from even the Kyoto Protocol in 1994, which seems to have been a big point there, and you working in for the World Bank projects and in Costa Rica and Guatemala and Belize, and then in wealth management, and then doing your own development programs. And you just seem to have been involved in a lot of high profile stuff. So why don't you take us through some highlights?
Yeah. It's fun when you say that. I can see this, the webs we weave of our lives, right, are so interesting in how you end up where you are. And I would say it's driven by, for me, I have it's probably an addiction to learning, you know, and it's an important skill. You know, I think that's one of the things we're going to talk about today, too, is as far as a sustainability leadership skill, is to be committed to learning and being somebody that's interested in their own self-development and development of the culture around them. But it's something that's driven me for sure to explore. And I'm always curious and interested in life. There's just so much to learn. And it's really what drove my curiosity, is what drove my exploration in this podcast that I have called Sustainability Mindshift, in trying to understand what it is about leadership today that, you know, that is both part of the problem and what is needed to help us transform into a sustainable or regenerative kind of world.
I know, and that's really my first question for you. What makes a sustainable leader that's not just any old leader? What's sustainable leadership different to leadership?
It's a great question, that one I am still figuring out, but I think you know, from my experience, and I think it's a big part of what led me to this podcast, is different experiences through my early part of my life, starting in rainforest conservation and seeing the world through a different lens by living overseas in Central America, and starting to look at the dynamics between human systems that were living in or near rainforests and the dependencies that existed, and how humans could actually try to survive and thrive in those environments without destroying the place that they were, you know, reliant on economically, and that the world is reliant on for healthy system, you know, at a large scale, like rainforest, for example. And working in a big bank for 6 years as an internal practitioner, running the programs. I've told this story before on other podcasts, but it's interesting because it didn't really occur to me until I was probably into my fourth or fifth year there, where I started realizing that all the great work that we were doing and all the strategic planning and the mapping and the coming up with the very specific action items for senior leaders who are very busy and they're, you know, they've got their paying jobs and their KPIs and stuff that they have to pay attention to clearly. And their role as they were volunteering on this U.S. Green Council to help us spread our influence through the organization and open doors for us. But we had very specific asks for them, you know, and it took time and careful thought to come up with things that were you know, doable action items. And yet when we asked them to do things, oftentimes there was a lot of acknowledgement and head nodding. The things that we were doing as far as the sustainable work we were doing was in alignment with their values, which was great. The culture of this particular bank was actually as a Canadian bank, is very sort of green oriented. So people aligned with their values and their intentions were there to make a difference, right? And continue to progress toward our goals. But in their real lives, they'd get caught up in the day-to-day of, you know, having to perform for their KPIs and get their stuff done. And the banking world is a dog-eat-dog world. It's very hyper-competitive and it's busy and there's change all the time happening. And, you know, a new CEO here and there, or, you know, their department head has, you know, moved on and people are constantly changing, moving up the ladder, if you will. And so there was always some other priority for them. And I was always sort of, it just kind of confused me. And then I started looking outside of the organization at the world and seeing, you know, the challenges that we see today very clearly from COP27, World Economic Forum. There's a lot of complaints that there's just these talking heads there. They're not taking action. And yet the Secretary General keeps saying, you know, we are heading off a cliff. We need to start taking action. You know, we've got the awareness. We've got the technical capabilities. We need to start doing things. And I felt like, yes, yes, we need to start doing things. But then why is it that we are so blind to, you know, or what's getting in our way from, you know, saving ourselves essentially, right? Because we know that we're heading off a cliff. And it started to occur to me when I worked for this leadership development consulting company doing business simulations that what was happening was it was our mindsets that we've been trained to see the world through this lens, oftentimes taught to us through our culture, through the realities of day to day, the mechanical mindsets that we have, that we can all sense. We all know that we have them, right? We all, you know, when you're not happy in your work and you're looking around and you feel like, and people use this word, I'm just a cog in a machine and I'm sitting in my cubicle and I'm, you know, driving to and from work. I mean, it's like the Matrix, right? It, you know, you start to sense that. You start feeling like, what is going on? What is this reality that we've created around us? Well, that is the reality that is shaped by our mindsets that's also being reinforced by the external world, putting its parameters around how we live and how we interact with each other and how we interrelate. So that in itself, I realized, is what needed to change. We needed to start changing ourselves and the way we saw the world, the way that we shaped our thoughts and decisions that then guided our behaviors. And then those behaviors, like an iceberg, you know, model.
Yeah.
That's what started this process. And I know that was a long answer, but.
So to break it down for people that might be listening, and this is a completely new concept to them, they will probably identify leaders that they work with as fairly narcissistic, possibly. And some of them, I assume, as I have worked for leaders that are psychopaths, really, because that sort of scale, and especially when you work in large corporate organizations that have done very well, that's what you see as a good leadership model. And I think within a sustainable leadership model, aren't we looking to replace that narcissistic sort of I'm the superhero that's come to save the day model with people who have had time to reflect on that, like you say, and say, ah, oh, there's stuff happening here that is more than me. It's more than me. And unless I can get people to co-create with me, I'm not going to be able to take a massive change along with me. Would you say that change, that shift in leadership style is important?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as you're saying this, and the word choices, which are completely understandable, and it's the way I speak as well, and we all do. It reflects. So let's just talk about, you know, let's say the narcissism of some leaders, right? And it's easy for us on the other side of that, because we all have those bosses that are either, you know, micromanaging or narcissistic, or, you know, some would say just purely greedy, or, you know, it's, you know, self-motivated, only care about the, you know, their own promotion and, you know, all that stuff. And when you start to look at the fact that this is how our society literally has trained us to think and behave and act, and our business schools teach us this, and our parents, the way that we parent, I'm a parent, the way that I parent my kids, I catch myself all the time. You know, you're in school and you're taught to be right. Like, who knows the answer to this? The person that raises their hand and gets it right. Yes, you are right. This person over here is wrong. Right and wrong, us versus them. Religion even does it in some cases. The way that science has taught us to look at things through a microscope and pay attention to the tiny individual parts, as opposed to necessarily sometimes thinking about the whole of this thing, whatever we're studying and thinking about. The way that we're trained to think very linearly, you know, that I'm going to get from X to Y to Z or A to B, C, you know, the way that we create our strategies around that, the way that we prioritize things in business. There's so many different aspects to the way that we have been trained to think. And so I guess I say this because fundamentally we need to start ourselves, even in our own frustration and anger with our bosses and our leaders, to have compassion for them. We have to have compassion, understanding that they are exactly like us and we're exactly like them. They just happen to have more pressures and KPIs and things that they're responding to. But most of us are just as focused on ourselves. We get up in the morning, what do you say? What am I going to do today? How am I going to advance my career? You know, what are my kids? How can I be a better parent? And so having that compassion starts to put yourself in the other person's shoes, starts to create that interrelationality and understanding of the other. That is one piece of changing, you know, that mindset that we all have. And in that process of changing your mindset, then you start to think about things in different ways. And there's, you know, a whole bunch of stuff I could talk about how to get there. But I think it's important that in order to change culture, we have to start to see ourselves and how we interrelate and how we look at each other and how we make judgments of other people, even when it feels like we are justified in saying so because our boss is breathing down our neck and not allowing us to move in a direction we wanted. So one thing I was trying to get to this point, and I sort of lost my track, but is as a change maker, I've heard this over and over again in organizations where you have a great vision and it's bigger than the parts, as we've talked about. It's bigger than your boss. It's I want to help this organization move in the right direction to be sustainable and be in balance with the planet and society. And yet so many change makers are just like, but I can't do anything. My hands are tied because I keep bumping up against the ceiling. You know, it's just like I'm being controlled from the top and I can only say so much. And you know, it's really risky to step out of line and outside of my comfort zone, like bring this stuff up and I could get fired. And there's real valid reasons for not, you know, ruffling the feathers or shaking up the nest or whatever those phrases are. And so again, I go back to, if you can start from that place of compassion and try to see through that person's eyes and what they're dealing with, and that they are actually more like you than not, and just start to have a different kind of conversation with them and be coming from a place of understanding, you'll see that they may actually take a deep breath for a second, you know, while you're talking to them, as opposed to seeing resistance or all these things that, you know, what you resist persists, you know, those phrases, and they might actually listen to you and start to have a conversation with you in a different way.
It's a lot, but it's good. And for those people listening that I have coached, they'll resonate completely with what you've just said. Because even though when I have been in these situations, I got so frustrated. And the bonus for me was that when I felt that frustration, I never really cared so much that I could get fired. And it meant more to me to say it anyway. And then by saying it and not having the fear associated with the stepping out of line and doing something different to everybody else, somehow my life got easier. And I try and pass that on to the people that I coach today and say, you'll be surprised the reaction you get. Some of this is so much in our own fear and what we fear and what we then have dreamt up, really, this whole fantasy of what we think is going to happen if we just say what we actually want to say, which normally comes from a real position of truth and understanding, and because you want something to be different. But again, you know, as you said before, what we're taught isn't necessarily that. So we always feel the fear of doing it first. And sometimes, depending on your situation, feeling that fear is enough just to stop people. Which takes me on to the next question, capabilities and skill sets then. How do we start? When we know this, when we know, and both of us are saying that we've been in this situation and we know how hard it can be, and we know we've been through the machine that has taught us this way, and for our whole lives, we have been practicing a certain type of being part of that machine, and it's sort of framed the people we are. How do we change that in ourselves? What capabilities, what skill sets, what should we be looking to do?
Well, I love that you said, how do we change that in ourselves versus how do we change that in others, right? So starting from there is critical. How do I change this in myself? Because that's the place to start. You can really only change yourself, right? And then how you are showing up in the world can have influence on how other people show up too. And we talked about that with your boss. But I think everybody's so unique and beautiful in their own, you know, what they bring to life, to this planet. Everybody has their own experiences that they've gone through. Everybody is completely unique in themselves. And I say that because everybody sees, you know, people are looking at the world through their own set of lenses and the influences that have shaped that way of looking at the world. And so I think the best place to start really is, if you're doing it for yourself, to step outside of the world that you sort of normally live in, step outside of your comfort zone. That could be traveling to a country that might, you know, you wouldn't normally travel to, or having experiences, even if you're not traveling far, you know, throwing yourself into some work, even, you know, going and volunteering for an organization that you might, maybe you realize you have some prejudices against, you know, homeless people or people of different color or types, you know, go throw yourself right in there and experience life through that new set of influences and perspectives that you're going to get from these people. I tend to like the idea. So if we were to say, how do we shape others, right? So I know we need to help shape this sustainability mindset. And when I say that, I don't mean that we all have to become experts in sustainability. It's really about, how do we shape a mindset that is oriented toward a sustainable future, as opposed to a profitable future only, or a machine-like type of future that we're building around us in a technology first future, whatever it might be that in your industry you're in, it's very sort of focused on other priorities than necessarily sort of thrivability, right? And so to do so, there are many different ways, but I think using experiential learning is so critical. And I use that as an example of going volunteering somewhere, but it can also be in the form of a nature immersion. There's a great one if you have the opportunity, and you can do it yourself. You can go into nature, and there's things you can get online to guided tours. You can take self-led tours. There's books you can read on that as well, but that is a great place to start to reimmerse yourself in connecting with nature, connecting with living systems. And there's so much you can learn from living systems that can be applied to business. That's the work I'm doing in regenerative leadership, which I won't go into detail right now about. One more thing I wanted to mention. So another great tool, which is what got me to the epiphany I had in sustainability mindshift, was business simulations. And they can be used to teach all kinds of different things. But if you can get into a type of, let's say, simulated environment, if you're not able to get out into nature and take the time away and stretch yourself into ways of thinking and being and behaviors and questioning your own mental models, questioning your behaviors, observing those behaviors, getting feedback on those behaviors from others around you, and then reapplying what you're learning. This is all the experiential learning cycle that they apply to business simulations. Relearning or reapplying what you're learning through feedback and observation and reflection into similar situations, but using that new mindset. And it's an evolutionary process. It's not like you're just going to flip a switch and you've got a new mindset, but you can actually have a switch flipped where suddenly you see things differently. We've all been there, right? Where you're fed some information or you watch a video or something, you're like, oh my God. And it really just, it's like a light bulb and you see, you can't unsee that anymore. You know, the way that you see now. The important thing is that you don't stop there, because when you watch a movie, for example, you might have that light bulb switch go off, but then you're going back to your old behaviors and getting back into your work and all that kind of stuff. It's important to put that to practice, because you're going to run into challenges. You're going to run, you know, there's different situations where it's applicable or not. And so putting that new insight into practice is one way to then convert it into a behavior.
I know. I think if you're a curious person, then typically you'll find these sort of things exciting. You know, I'm always joining some new group, inviting myself into something, just things that I don't know about because I want to know. And things that scare me because I find that kind of exciting and I want to face the fear of things and I want to know what's made me scared of it in the first place. And I'm not somebody who meditates or overanalyzes in a lot of ways, but I think that just that curiosity has made me quite self-aware. And then I talk to other people and that self-awareness obviously comes in as a great tool for coaching, because you can say to people, you don't have to. This is a fun thing to do. You know, you got nothing to do at the weekend. Why don't you go and volunteer somewhere? You know, why don't you take a trip to see? And there's so much going on wherever you live at the moment that there might be an activist group going on. You might hear lots of people talk about the good side and bad side of those activists. But unless you put yourself in that situation, you've got no opportunity to create your own opinion on that and to challenge your own thinking on it. It doesn't get enough focus that without having our own opinion, not just opinion, it's where our own minds tend to settle when you're listening to something or you're listening to somebody else's opinion, which I think is much more important sometimes, and then not acknowledging enough where your own mind might settle there and why you're feeling some emotions when somebody talks about something in one way and you feel a different set of emotions when they talk about it in another way. And then these things can be so fleeting. And sometimes if you've got no one to share that with, it's lost. The moment's lost, and the significance of that moment is also lost, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So this is kind of what you're saying, to get out there and experience those new things, because otherwise you do it in isolation. You can do it. Of course you can. I don't think it's the same, is it, as sharing these things?
No. And, you know, I'm going to jump into a regenerative leadership principle or actually a living systems principle real quick here, but I'm going to translate it in a way that hopefully is meaningful for your audiences. But I think because I've been really getting into, as I said, this the living systems principles, which make up this regenerative space. So how do we use life as the metaphor for things we do as opposed to the machine, which we've just talked about, right? We're caught up in that machine-like way of thinking for good reason, you know. Hundreds of years of development and age of enlightenment and the industrial revolution, all things that got us to where we are today, which are fantastic, but also have shaped the way that we think, which can be destructive as well. But a living systems principle about diversity and diversity of perspective, if there's a principle where life evolves and learns through the interaction of two or more systems. So if you think about a land-based system and a marine-based system, where those two things come together and even a climate system are mangroves. And mangroves are considered some of the most biodiverse areas on the planet. So what happens is life, if you think of it as literally a consciousness that is constantly trying to evolve, it is doing things in the service of regenerating itself, of reproducing the conditions for life to evolve and thrive. So these interactions of systems, land-based, marine-based, and climate-based in mangroves make it biodiverse. If you translate that into the boardroom or into your own life and business as a change maker, you just said it yourself, the diversity of opinions and thoughts, when they are allowed to come together and mix, that is where something beautifully and new can emerge from that mixing of diverse opinions. If it's left on its own, if you're just isolated in your space, this all the unique, beautiful intelligence that you have from your own life experience and this idea you might have, it dies because it doesn't have the ability to interact and exchange information with other parts of that ecosystem. So it's important as a leader too, to be able to allow for that space of emergence. And they say in regenerative speak, they'd say, listen to the edges. It's at the edges of these systems. And what do I mean by listen to the edges? If you're sitting in a room and you have somebody that might seem like the squeaky wheel and they're like, and they're like their opinion, they're, you know, unless they're literally crazy, but if they, I shouldn't say that because nobody's really crazy, but if they have different opinions and, you know, usually those are the ones that are hushed in meetings, like, no, that's a little crazy. We don't want to go there right now. Brad, you will talk to you later, you know, but listen to that person, give them a container, a space to express their opinions. You will start to see that if you listen to the edges of your system around you, that all these various opinions, and you start, and you can, and try to converge that thinking of these edges into coherent thinking, you'll start to see where the organization is headed because it's based on the experiences of all these different people, right, that make up the organization. What is the future that's emerging that we need to pay attention to? Otherwise, you'll drive yourself right into the ground, like if you, you know, good business case, Kodak, you know, did not listen to the people that are like, I don't think that print photography is going to be around much longer. Ah, shut up. Yeah.
No, and it is classic. I mean, you know, for now 18 years, I've gone into organizations and people will say to me, oh, don't talk to those people over there. They're the moaners, the whiners. They don't want to, they've never wanted to interact. They've never wanted to stay on the same page as everyone. They just disrupt us all the time. So straight away, that's where I sit with those people, because
yes,
and of course you have to give them time to just let go all of that emotion because no one has listened to them for so long. So we have to learn, don't we, to let people vent and just understand that that's what it is. It's just a vent, because when that has gone, then the real stuff is what they've always known. And for consultants that go into organizations, it is the easiest win that you have available to you.
Yeah.
Because they've been saying what should have happened for years, probably.
Yeah.
No one has listened.
Yeah. It's a little collective think tank just waiting for you, right?
Yeah. And I think when I think about sustainable leaders, and really wrongly, I think about younger leaders that are coming through now that somehow I think are just going to see the world differently. I don't know why I think that, as if that they've just been surrounded by this. But I think that, or I hope, maybe it's that I hope that young leaders coming through now see that balance between giving direction, which is what we think, you know, an old-fashioned leadership style would be, I'm here to direct you. I know what the problem is and I know how to solve it. That's why I get paid the big money and I've got the big chair. You know, it's all like that. And I hope that actually what we're talking about now is leaders coming through who say, actually, I don't know all the answers. I know that the answers will be here in this amazing group of people that work with me. And somehow they will learn to balance the need for people to have some direction, because people do like that. But that direction isn't confused with control. Mm-hmm. And that there is some freedom there for people to really start exploring things themselves, and there is some autonomy for people to feel like they have a place and their place is valid and their voice is valid.
Yeah, you're speaking the language of regeneration right there. I know we're talking about sustainability, but it's not a big leap. It is literally everything your audience knows about sustainability or wants to know. It's the same, but it's just using living systems as opposed to a machine as a metaphor, like literally, and looking ahead. And you're talking about flow. I just, as you're talking, I'm hearing you're talking about flow. and living systems work in flow, you know, streams, and they pass through multiple ecosystems, and there's flow, there's always exchange of energy constantly going on through systems. And you just said that yourself, you know, you can't stay static, you have to be able to allow flow to happen, to occur. It's one of the things you said.
I know, and I think because flow is something that we know from an optimum performance, again, you know, that machine talk, but optimum performance is flow, and we know that. And we have spent time now saying, well, how do we maintain this perfect harmony of flow? But I think still in the world that I find myself in, that is still very machine driven rather than living systems driven. And so how do you think that we can just make that transition from, what's one tip that you could give us that says, okay, this is how you'd say it in the machine world, this is a living system example?
Yeah. I mean, I think the starting point, as I mentioned before, is, you know, is self-awareness really is the starting point to any of this. And understanding that, you know, having compassion, I talked about compassion for others and your leaders, you really got to start with compassion for yourself too, and understand that we are trained to think this way. And our egos, our left brain, especially part of our brain, which is only one half of it, it's the left side, analytical, hyper-individual side. And the right side tends to be more sort of nurturing, and it's think of it more like feminine energies too in that regard. It's creative, right? You got the sort of male dominated side of the world, you know, egos are driving everything today. Sorry, I'm getting a little deep here, but our egos are, if we can allow ourselves to step outside of our egos, and that's really hard because, again, it's been reinforced over and over again for us to be, you know, looking out for ourselves and thinking for ourselves and looking at the world through our own lens and saying, you know, it's me versus you, and it's my opinion, I'm right, you're wrong. If we can find it in us through meditation or even walking in the woods and seeing that the world doesn't work like that, you know, if you can then start to break down some of the silos, break down some of the hierarchies, break down some of the processes and procedures and structures that are in place, that you can't get around that because you can't change an organization overnight, right? You can't change the way that it operates overnight. But you can by starting to free yourself. It literally is like the movie The Matrix. I mean, go watch that, right, to begin with. It's like freeing yourself from the construct of what has been shaped for you as a reality and seeing yourself as a sort of a, you have to sort of look at yourself as a, you know, observe yourself outside of that or observe yourself in it, but having that unbiased approach. And so you can then start to have the compassion for yourself, have the compassion for others, start to see that maybe a less command and control approach might be better in certain situations, listening to people with diverse perspectives that you might not have before.
I guess this is about then, so many people are unhappy at work, aren't they? And we've heard it all now since COVID, whether it's the great resignation or the not return. I can't think of all the snappy lines that have been used. The marketeers are going crazy at the moment, badging everything up. And it is that at the root of all this, people have been unhappy at work for a long time. And actually, I've worked with CEOs who have been unhappy as well, all the way through the organization, right to, you know, the people right at the front line, also unhappy. And so you think, actually, if every one of us is just taking that moment to step outside and go, why am I so unhappy with this? And I think when you're on the front line, there is a tendency, we touched on this earlier, there's a tendency for you to think that your leaders will have spotted this. They'll spot the unhappiness and they will do something to change that. And then, of course, when that doesn't happen, there's a disillusionment that goes on and a kind of giving up that goes on. Mm-hmm. So is there some way of training people to think differently about this? You know, can we train people to think differently? Or is it in you? Does it need to be in you to begin with?
I think it's innate in terms of who we really want to be and who we really are, I should say. And just as we've been trained through growing up in our society and everything to think this way, you know, by marketing and everything, the force of consume and everything, you know, profit first, all that stuff. You know, the civilization's starting to shift in that way with new enlightenment that's happening, with different people and younger generations that are actually in tune with the fact that we need to be more sustainable. But also, yeah, we can train our minds are actually pretty flexible and sorry, my dog is eating his phone. Come here. It's so loud. Yeah, he chooses to do it right at my feet during a podcast. But they're eager to learn, and they're very malleable in that way. And but it does take some. This is what the mind shift, you know, that I'm working on. That is, what are the techniques to give people those insights without having to, you know, I have 25 years in the sustainability field, so I have a long term of kind of shaping my perspective of the world to get to here. We don't have 25 years to shape people's minds, especially those that are in control and power today, that are driving businesses and governments forward, making these decisions that are just reinforcing the things that are causing our, you know, the crises in our existential situation. And so, yeah, we can do it through training. And if it's done in the right way, you can have enough of an insight. All you have to do is, again, remember, is when you see something, you can't unsee it. And if you do enough of those to just start to shift your perspective, even just a little bit, you're already going to be on it. It's like, if you think of a beginning of a path, right? When you're only a little bit into it, you're only this far apart. But when you get up a little bit more, you know, this far apart. And so, you know, you're going to be on a different path, and you're going to be making different decisions that might even accelerate your ability to continue to learn and your curiosity to see things a new way. Cause we all feel it. The great resignation is people are feeling disconnected from each other. It's called the illusion of separation. Giles Hutchins, one of my favorite authors in the world, and Laura Storm, I've been on her regenerative leadership journey for a year. They talk about this, the illusion of separation. And we've been trained to see ourselves separate from nature, see each other separate from each other. Yet deep down inside, we all are human beings that need connection. We need to be, you know, working together and feeling like we're valued, and all these things that businesses, in the construct of a business that's a machine thinking type of business, most of them are today, is disconnected from that feeling that we know we all have. And so you're sort of left with this, you know, I know there's something not right with this environment, the work that I'm in, the culture. It's not appealing to who I am and what I need at a deep level. And so I just have to leave it. You know, that's, so you just leave your, and your sort of people are looking for what's next. How do I do something more meaningful in life? How do I connect with people? And I think we can create that in the space of the organization and prevent people from leaving, because a lot of organizations are really great organizations. They've just sort of lost their way, you know?
Yeah. And this is my final question for you today. What do the organizations and businesses do? Because we have a problem, and it's a global problem now in terms of workforce. I mean, this was also predicted. And so there's part of me that thinks, oh, we just do not learn, because we knew this was going to happen. We have, you know, we have stats, we have the numbers, and we know that some countries are younger than others, and some countries have an older demographic than others. And it seems that at a time when we should have been looking for globally how we unite a little bit more, actually now politicians and world leaders might be actually encouraging more separation at a time when we require more unity. And then that really does start a trail that when it gets to business level, they start to say, oh yeah, but the regulations say this, and I'm stuck with this, and this is the decision that's been made. And this compounds an inability to do what we really need to do. But then we're now heading towards a problem that, if we're not careful, will not be able to be solved, because organizations are now genuinely not able to find the workforce that they want. So surely now we're at a bit of a tipping point where the organizations and the businesses are thinking, ah, we're going to need to do something different here. Do you think that's the case? And if you think so, what do you think they should do?
You ask such big questions. I love it. You know, there's a quote that's used quite a bit. It's almost overused in this world of systems thinking and regeneration and even in sustainability today. And it's an Einstein quote, and there's other forms of it from other people. But, you know, you can't solve a problem using the same mindsets or ways of thinking that created the problem in the first place. And so I think that's what's happening today with, as you mentioned, these world leaders that are trying to cause change by continuing to sort of hyper manage and manipulate systems, you know, like super efficiency, like machine, like let's tweak a few levers and then we can, you know, make things better. And systems change is enormous. And this, the weight of thinking as a change maker, as an individual change maker, you know, how do I even change? I go through that all the time. How do we even change these enormous systems that are in place? How do I change my boss's mind even, you know, immediately? How do I change the organization? And literally it comes down to this, and I've come to this full realization that as crazy as it might sound to the individual, even telling myself this, that it literally starts with yourself. And Gandhi said that, and everybody else, start making the change inside, be authentic to who you are. And if you need to go take a walk in the woods to figure that out, that's awesome, or meditate on it. But start with yourself, because then the way that you show up, the way that you communicate, the way that you enable space for creative ideas, and for people to feel valued, and all these things that we need, and influencing others that say, yeah, it's okay to show up like that. You know, Nina's showing up like that, Brad's showing up, I'm gonna show up like that. And so you start to actually cause change to happen. It can happen quite rapidly. And then the policies and procedures and everything else that are sort of holding this organization into this machine-like form can also start to unravel. And it sounds scary to unravel, but I'm not talking about like, you know, falling apart, but actually loosening it up enough and allowing a life to emerge through that and following the path that everybody knows is the true path that is aligned with life and living systems.
I think that's a beautiful, beautiful place to end. It starts and ends with us, doesn't it? It really does. And I think that everyone listening today will also appreciate that message. Definitely the people I coach, it's something that I hammer home. They don't like it because, of course, everyone wants the answer. You don't want the answer to be the answer is you.
You know, this I'll say this. This is actually even a better place to end. And this has been a big thing in the regenerative circles. And I'm sorry we've gone there and I'm beyond sustainability right now. But a person named Dana Christensen Wall, he said that biggest thing that we can leave the next generation is the unanswered questions of our generation today. And so it's not about having the answer, which is an egoic way of looking at it, right? It's about coming up with the biggest question that is unanswerable and actually trying together. That's where collaboration and everything come. How do we try together to solve this, to answer this big unanswered question?
Thanks so much. I've loved it. I knew I would love it. I loved it more than I knew I would love it. Thanks so much for being my guest today. And I hope this is just the first of many and we can dig into the regenerative stuff at another point.
Thank you, Nina. It's a pleasure.
Well, thanks again to Nina's guest, and thank you for listening to The Change Troubleshooter. If you'd like to continue the conversation, contact Nina directly, ninadar.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please like it. Join us again for the next episode of The Change Troubleshooter. This has been a Sun-Soaked Creative production.